This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 in the evening, and for our very first story of this hour, something quite interesting. I don't know that I agree. Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has insisted against accepting wholesale an international concept of human rights, saying that it comes from a Western value system and that communities in Malaysia have their own values that must be respected and that therefore there needs to be limits on freedoms.
I quote, human rights is based on cultural, the value system of the Western people. There is some issue in which the people in the East regard as normal.
However, I guess now what he's trying to get at is this notion that as we move towards having more freedoms, we need to determine the limits of those freedoms. And those limits, I guess, are now being determined by cultural norms or cultural realities. I don't know. I'm not sure that I agree with this.
I call nonsense. No, because let's be frank about where this stems from, right? This is stemming from the discussion surrounding LGBT rights in Malaysia. And Putrajaya has come out and said that they will not accept calls for LGBT rights and same-sex marriage. Dr. Mahathir says so, Anwar Ibrahim has said so. And a lot of them have crouched it in this caveat of, do what you want in the bedroom lah, but just don't bring it outside and parade it around.
I suppose what has been bothering me is that this statement is LGBT rights and same-sex marriages would remain unaccepted by Malaysians despite their acceptance elsewhere. And the thing is, that's just not true. I mean, you can say would remain unaccepted by a majority of Malaysians. If you'd like to make that argument, you can. But to say broadly that Malaysians are never going to accept this, I think that's false, simply because there are people right now who accept it.
Yes.
And so to make that statement seems a little bit, I don't know, like it's just discounting how certain people feel.
Yes, there is that. And of course, you're discounting how the minority feels, so it's okay, right? Because you're trying to speak on behalf of the majority, and that's the logic at play here. However, let's just go back to different minorities, and you cannot say that this is hyperbolic or a stretch, but for the longest time, if you weren't a certain skin colour, those rights didn't apply to you. Right, and that is that comes from the very same place, that a specific individuals of specific skin colors were chosen by God, and everyone else was irrelevant or lesser in some way. And so, there is a very fine line between that and what we're saying today about the LGBT community.
I mean, if you're going to use that example, it's also worth pointing out that value systems change.
Exactly.
You know, they don't remain static as people kind of, as different generations grow to adulthood, value systems have a tendency to shift and to adapt. And I don't think we should discount the possibility that Malaysian society could adapt. And also, I think we do need to interrogate this notion of a Western version of human rights.
No, I disagree. And you know, many people have already pointed this out. I mean, historians and scholars have pointed this out, especially when it comes to same-sex relationships, for example. It is rife in Eastern cultures and religions as well. I mean, you can look on ancient paintings in India. It is not a Western construct.
It's not new either.
It's not new either.
We would love to hear from you. Do you think that we need to have different understandings of human rights based on culture? Is that a valid statement? And should there be limits to these freedoms? That number to call, 7733 2900. You can also keep your thoughts coming. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Very quickly, two conflicting messages that have come in.
Right.
Toh saying, I agree with Uma that what Dr. M is doing is talking nonsense. Anwar Ruslan says, good day, it's valid, and I agree with Dr. M, because imagine if one day pedophiles group together and fight for the equal rights to love, like what happened in the US around 10 years ago. I'm not sure that happened. What will our stance be then? As mentioned, values change over time.
Yet again, we go back to this same old problem of somehow grouping pedophiles along with the LGBT community. There's often a conflation that occurs. I think it's a well-established fact that pedophilia is a mental illness, right? And it is something that they have to get treatment for. The LGBT community do not suffer from a mental affliction.
It's just something that It's actually, it's not even something. It's not a lifestyle. It's not a mental affliction.
It's just who they are.
Exactly.
There is science behind all of this.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Science.
Valid.
Love science.
And we've got Manoprian who says, human rights, it's not Malay, Chinese, Indian or Caucasian rights. It ought to be clear enough. Now, you would think, but I guess the idea here is in terms of how we're understanding human rights and implementing human rights. This is coming, of course, after we said that we would be ratifying the remaining UN convention. So I think that's the angle that we're coming at. But anyway, please continue to keep your thoughts coming in. Do we need to have different understandings of human rights based on culture? As our Prime Minister has said, that number, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So we wanted to get some insights into how cultural values might affect human rights in other Asian countries. So we're crossing over now to Andreas Harsono, who is a researcher for the Human Rights Watch in Indonesia. Andreas, thank you so much for joining us on the program. What do you make of Tun Mahathir's comment that the international concept of human rights doesn't match our cultural values as an Asian country?
I consider it as a today's statement. That statement is for today consumption. People change, countries change, culture change, religious interpretation also change. It can be seen as a political tool because, again, it is a statement of today. Dr. Mahathir might try to address certain constituencies back home in Malaysia. But again, the way I see it is for today consumption. So I don't think statement of today might be valid, let's say, 50 years, 100 years from now. We call it human rights. We don't call it Western human rights or Eastern human rights. We have the so-called Universal Human Rights Declaration, which means it works for the whole world. So human rights is human rights.
Have you found that the rights of the LGBT community are often referenced when we talk about differing value systems in Asia? Is this a perennial issue for all Muslim countries?
Interestingly, unlike Malaysia, the Dutch inherited criminal code in Indonesia does not criminalize gay sex in Malaysia because of the previous legacy. In Indonesia, it is not a crime. But there are efforts in certain parts of Indonesia to criminalize gay sex. There are really, really bad things against LGBT individuals. Last year, more than 300 were arrested. And the government, the parliament, there was even an effort to criminalize gay sex, but it did not materialize. But things are not always good, especially against two types of minorities in Indonesia. One is gender minorities, women and LGBT. The second is religious minorities. Either they are non-Muslim minorities, Christian, Buddhist, Hindus, or Muslim minorities among themselves. Or the third is native faith believers. These are mostly ethnic religion. For the Japanese, for the Tata, for the Sundanese, they all have their own ancestor faith. They are mostly discriminated in this post-Suharto Indonesia. But in general, I would like to say public awareness and then the strengthening of civil societies in Indonesia are getting the upper ground.
And have you found that differing cultural values is the rationale most often used when policymakers counter this push for human rights?
The main argument against human rights in Indonesia are used mostly in the name of Islam or in the name of ethnicity or cultural values. It is not nationwide because Indonesia is diverse. Indonesia has 34 provinces. Four or five of them are Christian-dominated provinces and one Hindu-dominated province, Bali. But in other provinces, predominantly Muslim provinces, Islam is too often being used as a pretext to counter human rights. But I also have to stress that there are many Muslim scholars, Muslim academics, who defend human rights. They are defending women's rights. They are defending LGBT rights, minorities' rights. So the debate within Islam in Indonesia is very intense.
Tun Mahathir and the Pakatan government have pledged to ratify all remaining UN conventions, but as it stands within ASEAN, Malaysia has ratified the least amount of conventions, putting us behind other so-called less developed nations. What has Indonesia's process been like to ratify and enforce these international conventions?
President Suharto stepped down from power in 1998. And immediately after the new parliament took power, the new government took power, the idea to ratify international conventions, they also started. But it only happened in 2005, or 7 years after Suharto stepped down from power. Why it took so long, 7 years? Of course, because there are deliberations. It is not easy to write laws in Indonesia. I have to mention to write laws because what Indonesia did was that the parliament wrote a law to rectify the international conference. It only happened 7 years after the fall of Suharto. And there are many laws. You know, we are talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of laws and regulations. So it takes time. Mm-hmm. Until now, many of these international requirements are still not met in Indonesia, despite ratifying the conference back in 2005.
Can countries in ASEAN intervene or advise their neighbors to ratify these conventions?
Actually, the non-interference consensus in ASEAN is not going to withstand the changing inside ASEAN now. Over the last 1 month, for instance, there are two prominent ASEAN figures who explicitly or implicitly questioned that non-interference consensus. The first was Marty Natalegawa, Indonesia former foreign minister, who wrote a book questioning that principle again because it is not suitable for the 21st century, if you will. The second is, of course, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad himself, who talked about the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar, who questions Aung San Suu Kyi leadership. This is very un-ASEAN if we use the old measurement, the 20th century measurement. I totally agree with what both gentlemen have said, that ASEAN should change. It is high time to review that position and start to include human rights into ASEAN principle. If I have an opportunity to meet Dr. Mahathir, I would advise him just ratify them. Of course, there are things that cannot be immediately implemented in Malaysia, but the general idea of non-discrimination, for instance, of equality, should be underlined first. It is the first step to make Malaysia a rights-respecting country. Just ratify first, and then let's find time to sit down together to deliberate piece by piece, because there are hundreds of pieces inside those international conferences.
Andreas, thank you so much for weighing in. That was Andreas Harsono, researcher for Human Rights Watch in Indonesia, giving us his take on the position that cultural values have in the fight for human rights, particularly in the ASEAN region.
Mm-hmm.
We have had a number of messages that have come in. Kairi responding to something we mentioned earlier. Pedophiles are not a sexual orientation. A valid relationship requires legitimate consent from both parties. A child is not old enough to properly consent to a relationship with a full-grown adult. We've actually spoken about this with clinical psychologist Vizla Kumaris, and if you look up the podcast on our site that covers the issue of consent in more detail, Kairi goes on to say, no matter what the culture is, human rights should be given to each and every individual, with the limit being as long as it doesn't hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Arihan saying, LGBT will never be accepted in any Muslim majority country. It's not about values, but religion. It's clearly stated in the Quran and the Bible. I don't know why we're dragging the Bible into this, that God condemns LGBT.
So I think my point or my question is this, right? When we talk about human rights, and at least the basic human rights, it's a question of not discriminating against any person based on whatever, color of skin, race, religion, sexual orientation, and so on. That is the very basic tenets of human rights. And that's what always perplexes me when people talk about limiting human rights, because surely every religion in the world tells you to treat your fellow man and woman with respect and treat them how you would like yourself to be treated, right? what the problem we find here and lots of countries all over the world are active efforts to discriminate against individuals. And I think that and to encourage such active efforts at discrimination is a terrible thing.
And I would like to say, while I don't personally believe at all that it is a choice, that being a member of the LGBT community is a choice, I would like to say that for people who are very quick to, offer discrimination, it's strange that just because someone made a choice that you disagree with, that you
even if it were a choice,
that you would be so quick to withdraw human rights from them. They are still people. They might be people that have made a different choice, but nevertheless. Anyways, here to give us a bit more of a Malaysian understanding, because earlier we took more of a Southeast Asian ASEAN view, we have Yu Renchung from the Women's Aid Organization. Renchung, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Uma. Thanks for
having
me.
Hello.
So, I mean, let's start off by looking at the statement, right? Do we need to have different understandings of human rights based on culture? I mean, is that something that we should be adopting here in our country?
Well, I think when you have Western versus Asian values, some people have an idea of what that means in their head, and it might lead them to believe that, okay, human rights are more aligned to Western values. I think some of the comments that you receive from the public echoes that. But I think we need to really look at those and break down those preconceptions a little bit. And one of them is that the West and East have static values, and that these values are homogenous. So is that really true? If we think of like what is a Western value, what is an Eastern value, and that changes over time. If you look at Western culture, human rights was something quite foreign until recently. Western societies were feudalistic, governed by absolute monarchies in many cases. Freedom of religion very limited, freedom of speech very limited, gruesome torture was practiced, and so on. So I think to say that, human rights is something fundamentally Western, that's probably not factually accurate. And what we have seen is that only now things have changed, and because of successive political movements within societies, and I think to add that those are internal political movements. So I think the point here is that not only do values change over time, cultures change over time, but there isn't this homogenous Western culture or this homogenous Asian culture. People are different. People in different sides think differently. It's up to society to really move with the times. And we've seen this political movements in the West, you could argue that, okay, fine. As a matter of fact, a lot of these local movements that led to more fundamental rights and freedoms perhaps did start in the West, but that doesn't mean that they're distinctly Western. We've seen in Asia and across the globe similar domestically driven calls for reform and human rights.
I'm curious about this. I mean, if we say that things are evolving as they should, I mean, if values change, if they depend on society, then when it comes to a country like ours, where there are multiple cultures to contend with, there is a dominant religion, and there are certain sensitivities that we need to contend with, how then do we come up with, a workable version of what we would understand as human rights?
I think that's a really good question. And if you think of what human rights are, actually, human rights are a modern creation. There's something based on values and assumptions. But essentially what the human rights are, it's a political tool that was created by the United Nations in the 40s and developed in the decades since. So this question that we're having in Malaysia about different cultures and different religions, you can look at it as something that is not really that unique, actually, because these arguments were had at the very beginning of the conceptions of human rights. And if you look at the United Nations system that actually created the human rights mechanisms, starting, of course, with the UDHR, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it wasn't as if all the countries were the same. There were six member states at the time. And overwhelmingly, countries came together to support the UDA Shah. And if you look at the breakdown of the countries that did support the UDA Shah, 56 were in favor, and 8 abstained, and 0 were opposed. And if you look at the countries that voted in favor, it was not as if a majority of these countries were from any particular region of the world. 14 were Western or European, 19 were Latin American states, and 15 were African and Asian states. So it's quite an even distribution across the globe. Certainly not a majority were Western. And if you look at the countries or member states that abstained, most of them were Soviet bloc. So 6 of the 8 were Soviet bloc. So we do not see sort of a cultural divide between the East and the West that led to a big misunderstanding of human rights. And so I think if you take that argument down to Malaysia, we can see that it's not something that's new or unique. It's something that's human rights. It's from the very creation of human rights we've been grappling with this problem, with this challenge, rather. It's really something that I don't think we can look at Malaysia and say, you know, we're so unique that we need a different set of human rights. This argument has been played out globally and across different countries that are diverse as well.
Yeah, Renchong, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, obviously, when we look across the board, when we're crafting declarations like this, we always think about the worst of us, right? And how do we protect the worst of us? And we have to put ourselves in their shoes. But tell me this, is there any contradiction in Tun Mahathir's statement about the limitations of human rights and then the government's pledge to actually ratify all the remaining UN conventions?
Yeah, I mean, in a way you could think of if, I guess the cynical view is that politicians will say different things at different times. But I don't want to say...
More like
that.
The realistic view, but carry on.
Yeah. Yes, but it could be, you know, I mean, I think if you look at human rights interpretations and implementations, you can think of some legitimate scope for variation. So, for example, you may accept that everyone has the right to access to healthcare, but how that is implemented and interpreted might be slightly different from country to country and in an acceptable scope. For example, certain countries might provide that healthcare directly. Some may set up a social insurance scheme that allows people to access healthcare through the private markets. So there may be some scope and, of variation there. A second area where there may be some flexibility is in the issue of reservations to convention. So when one country ratifies a convention, they have an option of reserving a certain provision. So that means a country can say, mm-hmm. I agree with 99% of this convention, but for this 1% provision, I'm going to reserve it for now. So under certain circumstances, a government can do that. But of course, the understanding is that given time, that reservation will then be lifted.
Now,
so it's not necessarily a contradiction in what the Prime Minister said.
So when it comes to ratification, while we're talking about that, in Malaysia, there are still a lot of gaps in the law that don't meet the standards of international human rights conventions. Realistically, how far can ratification go in addressing this?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite interesting that you mentioned that. And in fact, that was the previous government's main justification for not ratifying conventions. The argument was, we're not going to ratify all these other conventions because we don't meet the provisions. So only when we meet the provisions, then will we ratify the conventions. So that's not such a great approach in a lot of people's opinion because that just means that you're never going to reach 100% these standards. And I think that just means that the conventions will never be ratified. And the proof of that is that until now, we've only ratified 3 of the 9 conventions, one of the lowest ratification rates in the world. What makes sense, I think, is to go ahead with what the new government is doing, which is great, which is to go ahead and ratify these conventions. And this will actually help the country meet whatever obligations that we are not meeting at the moment. How? There are two ways. So one, of course, is you're adding pressure on yourself. You're kind of poking yourself in the back. And the idea here is that you know, you it's kind of like, you might ask, like, why would a government do that? It's kind of like, you know, you want to get fit, but you know you're going to be lazy to go to the gym. So you know, create these commitment devices that enable you, like, encourage you to go and fulfill those obligations. So that's the first, I think, benefit. And the second benefit is that by ratifying a convention, you're enabling yourself to be the opportunity of being reviewed and guided by expert committees. So each convention, there is an associated expert committee. So, for example, you can look at CEDAW, which is the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination of All Forms, Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or you can think of it as the Women's Rights Convention. There is a text, of course, that we must comply, but if you ratify CEDAW, which Malaysia has, you also agree to be reviewed by what's called the CEDAW Committee. So it's an expert panel, a panel of international experts in issue of gender equality and women's rights. So this panel will review Malaysia every 4 or 5 years and give advice and recommendations to Malaysia on how to improve, how to actually achieve gender. Ratifying the six conventions, Malaysia will also be able to have this expert reviewed by six committees. And what this means is we'll have better expertise and knowledge to actually fill all these gaps that we might be having at the moment.
Ren Cheung, thank you so much for joining us on the show. That was Yu Ren Cheung from the Women's Aid Organisation telling us about his perspective on, or rather the Malaysian perspective on human rights based on cultural values.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, just taking a look at the UN as well and the, I guess, the legal provisions afforded. I mean, it is a very holistic picture that Ren Cheung has kind of painted, but, you know,
I like that he mentioned that we're not as special as we think we are. That pleases me.
Well, no, I mean, but therein lies, I guess, the politics, right, and the political statement of it. Now, let's not forget, this is an argument. This Asian values versus Western values was an argument that Mahathir spoke of back when he was Prime Minister back in the 80s and 90s. And we had this discussion, and the world kind of came to a conclusion that, you know, actually, values are values, lah. You know, and that's why we crafted a Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
We have got Victor on the line. Victor, thank you so much for holding. We will get to you right after these messages. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.